Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
GE 2020, of course, in the history books right now. And joining us on the line is Nicholas Fang, the former nominated member of parliament, founder of Strategic Communications Consultancy and a market research agency. Nick, welcome to the show. What's your overall take on the result of GE 2020?
I think, you know, obviously, depending on who you ask, there would be a different perception on this. And I think part of the reason Prime Minister Lee, early on Saturday morning when he had the press conference, looked a little bit, you know, I would say he didn't look like he'd had a resounding success. He mentioned that it was a good mandate, but possibly not the strong mandate that they'd been looking for. And at the same time, you know, a little bit unexpected by the levels of support that they received or did not from the Singapore people. So I think some of this has to do with track record in terms of their expectations of how they have secured results in the past, where we were this time round. But, you know, I tend to agree with you. I think over 60% and, you know, 90% of the seats in Parliament, it's a strong result by any measure in terms of what the PAP can do as the incumbent, as the ruling party. Very little, if anything at all, has changed. And I think we're in a good position to deal with the clear and present dangers, the challenges, right? So, again, we were talking that it's great to see the different sides coming together, pledging to work together for the good of Singapore and Singaporeans to deal with the looming economic downturn as well as COVID-19 threat, which by no means has gone away. So I think it's definitely, well, it's a cliche to say it's a new dawn, but it is. Tomorrow will mark the start of the work that lies ahead for all the parties. We've seen the Workers' Party and its Secretary General Pritam Singh being acknowledged as the leader of the opposition. That's a new development and certainly something worth keeping an eye out.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You know, that's a new stage in Singapore's political development to have him officially acknowledged by the Prime Minister to be given an office, you know, staffing and resources going forward as the leader of the opposition. How did that strike you to hear that announcement being made? And what actual impact do you think it will have on the discourse between the PAP and opposition going forward?
Well, I think it's a very interesting development. You know, in the past, and I've been looking at a few elections, and we've heard that the previous Workers' Party chief, Mr. Lau Tia-kiang, was recognized as the de facto leader of the opposition, but without this sort of official recognition by the ruling government as well. So that's certainly something new. As you mentioned, the resources that will be allocated, we don't have the details just yet, but it certainly marks a bit of a change from where we are today. But I think it's certainly a recognition on the part of the ruling party or the incumbent government that the opposition, you know, there seems to be a desire among Singaporeans to see greater presence of opposition in parliament and potentially moving beyond just the notion of having an extra voice, you know, to have more views, right, which is sort of the traditional view of what the opposition contributes in parliament. To a certain extent, that's why the non-constituency MP scheme was created, right, to ensure that we would have this diversity of voice. But Singaporeans, you know, voted in Sengkang to have elected opposition members in parliament as opposed to just the non-constituency, the Biggest Loser, you know, MPs. And I think recognizing officially the opposition and the leader of the opposition in the House, in parliament, I think confers not just recognition, but also a sense of greater duty and responsibility. I think for the longest time, if we look at the opposition parties that step up and what they say in terms of campaigning and canvassing for support, you know, they declare that they are, you know, here to make a positive contribution. And I think that recognizing them officially basically confers greater responsibility and says, all right, you know, you can't just be here to disagree for the sake of disagreeing, to object for the sake of objecting. You have a critical role to play, a more institutionalized role. You have to take responsibility, of course, of your constituencies and running of the town councils and things like that. But you do have a more important formal role to play in parliament rather than just, you know, checks and balances and things like that. So I'm certainly interested to see how this development will shape not just the discourse in the House in Parliament, but also the role, the actions of the opposition, and in this case, the Workers' Party.
We're speaking with Nicholas Fang, the former nominated member of Parliament and founder of a Strategic Communications Consultancy and Market Research Agency. And what you mentioned there about the opposition now taking a more active role, it was interesting. Pritam Singh said, quote, "I will endeavor," this was just yesterday, I will endeavor to ensure that the Workers' Party under my leadership will remain loyal to Singapore and all Singaporeans, and also that they, you know, he looked forward to serving as the leader of the opposition to carry out his duties to the best of his abilities. And I think everybody realizes, and everybody has acknowledged on all sides of the political divide, COVID-19 and the economic downturn that we're facing is job number one as we go forward. What do you think that the opposition voice will bring to that discussion that we haven't already heard or seen addressed by the PAP? If you're to look into your crystal ball and knowing what we know right now, which of course, you know, we don't know everything just yet, but what do you see as being different or being added on to?
That's a good question because, of course, when we talk about the opposition, we're not just talking about the Workers' Party.
Right.
Obviously, we have, you know, two non-constituency MP positions that would likely go to the PSP, the Progress Singapore Party. Mm-hmm. They haven't, as far as I know, declared who is going to be taking up those two positions. So we will have more than just the Workers' Party in the opposition in Parliament. So I think in terms of the ideas that if you look at the manifesto and the rhetoric from all the different parties in the campaign, period. The Workers' Party famously, you know, in sort of parliamentary debate on television, Dr. Vivian Balakrishnan described them as PAP light. And I know that different people look at that in different ways. Some could see it, you know, slightly less than complimentary. Mm. And, you know, I don't think Dr. Vivian was meaning it in an insulting way. But their positions tend not to be too far removed from current policy and current directions,
right.
And they tend to recommend tweaks and changes on the margin. So it will definitely be interesting to see, you know, how the discussion about COVID-19 relief measures is going to proceed. I think we see across the board a general recognition that jobs has to be a critical factor in terms of helping Singaporeans tide through this economic downturn as well as the viral outbreak. And I think that's going to be the key focus. In terms of the other two opposition guys, potentially from PSP, yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether they also push and champion for any significant changes, bearing in mind that, of course, the PAP has a majority and more importantly, has a supermajority to ensure that policies and decisions go through the House as well. So I think, again, you know, we have potentially up to 12 opposition members in Parliament, which is an increase from the previous number. And we'll hopefully see not just more lively debate, but more constructive debate. You know, if people are going to object to certain things, I hope they're willing to back it up with, you know, viable alternative solutions that they can propose that will enhance and make things better rather than just bogging things down in terms of, you know, long-drawn parliamentary sessions. You've noticed that the parliamentary sessions are getting longer and longer.
Yes.
These days because there are a lot of people who want to say things.
Indeed. We're talking with Nicholas Fang, the former nominated member of Parliament. And Nick, when you got into Parliament and your first day sitting in there, what was that experience like? And do you think the experience that you had will be different somehow with this new mandate that opposition has been given as of this past Friday?
I think it's going to be quite different. I came in 2012, which was on the heels of the 2011 elections, which were not far in terms of results from what we saw on polling day this time round,
yeah.
Right, in terms of overall percentages. At that stage, the Workers' Party had just secured a GRC for the first time, and this time round they've secured their second GRC for the first time. So I think there's some similarities in terms of it being a new step in political development in Singapore. But I think what's different now is that obviously the Workers' Party has some experience in managing town council. Hopefully in Sengkang, you know, the guys are going to be able to hit the ground running, learning from the experiences of the guys in Aljunied. But I think one thing, I don't know whether it will be different, but something I certainly hope is different, and we've already seen signs of that during the election period this time round, is that there's a different form of engagement, right? We talk about a digital election because of COVID-19. We talk about the less physical presence in terms of rallies or the reduced intensity of door-to-door campaigning. A lot more stuff being done online and also on the broadcast media. I think it's created a different dialogue, not just in the way that we engage and the platforms that we engage on, but in the way that certain things are discussed. You're obviously, you know, if you had a physical rally, it is the people conducting the rally talking directly to and conveying their message to their audience, largely, you know, supporters and curious bystanders. When you speak in the internet space, on the digital space, you're speaking to everyone, And not only are you speaking to everyone, but everyone has a chance to talk back at you, whether it's in comments or whether it's in, you know, sort of resharing content with their own spin on it. So I think that that's really changed the dynamic. Some parties seem to have done better at it this time around, and others are still, you know, struggling with how to engage properly in that particular respect. So now that we're going into parliament, now that we're going back into the actual business of governing the country, I'm going to be interested to see how this engagement continues to be pushed out there. Because, you know, I think we've seen a far more active netizenry, maybe not citizenry, but we can see a lot more people is seemingly interested in politics, activated with opinions. And as we start to see the debate in parliament and the actions being taken, I think we cannot move away, and we cannot say, okay, we're not going to care about this particular demographic, the online digital demographic. So that'll be interesting for me.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I had a conversation with Natalie Pang, the senior lecturer in social media at NUS, and, you know, across the spectrum, whether it was the older generation, I'll put older in quotes, depending on who you are, you might not feel that old, but the older generation on Facebook, the younger generation, perhaps on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and others, across the spectrum, engagement has been much, much higher on social media this election cycle because of COVID-19, of course, but also just where we're at as a society in using social media more. And this idea of, you know, our social discourse will now has been changed forever in terms of politics here, because, of course, the PAP has been good on social media for a long time. But some of these emerging parties or the other opposition parties like the Workers' Party really have figured out a way forward to engage their constituents in a new way. And from what we've seen so far, it seems like that will be a positive impact, that the speaking about policies and politics will be an ongoing and hopefully heartfelt conversation now between those in power and those who elected them to be there.
No, I think those are very good points. And that discussion that you had with Natalie earlier was very interesting. But I think what we've seen is maybe the first stage in some of the parties were not that conversant with social media or digital communications. Mm. So they've converted some content to go out into the digital space and the social space. But what I see is that it's still early days. So, you know, some of the content was communicated in a very traditional format. It's basically just converting it to a digital format.
Sure.
I think what people need to recognize is that you have a different tone when you speak online. People hear things differently when they see it, they read it, or they watch a video online. So those are nuances that have to be mastered if you want to become really, really effective.
Yeah.
My biggest fear is that, you know, the things that seem to do well in the digital space are memes, you know, humorous things. There are, you know, videos that are cut out certain sound bites that are funny, that are making fun of people. And those are the things that go viral because people find it entertaining.
Sure.
I think political discourse online shouldn't just be entertaining. I don't think it should be boring, but it shouldn't just be entertaining. There has to be a way to leverage on the tools and the platforms so that we can have a proper conversation where the communication of ideas and information is done in a way that isn't obscured by, you know, humor or just making fun or jokes and things like that. So I don't necessarily have really great examples up, you know, on hand right now of people who are able to do that. But that has to be something that all the politicians and all the parties have to really work at. Prevent us devolving into, you know, all the negative parts about the online culture, right? You know,
sure.
People who are sort of the cancel culture, which leverages a lot online.
Mm.
You know, you have people who are just making fun. We saw early in the campaign period, or even before the campaign period, one of the PAP candidates, you know, facing huge backlash online. I'm not sure if that was the only reason why he chose to drop out of the race, but, you know, it certainly played a role. So I hope that we see a shift online, but in the right way, right? Where we have a constructive and positive discussion and really a lot more information reaching people so they can make the right decisions and understand issues better.
Yeah, talking with Nicholas Fang. Nick, one last topic that I'd like to bring up, and it was one that was front and center early on Friday, the general election day, which were the queues, the challenges that many, especially older people, had because of COVID-19 regulations and putting on gloves and sanitizer and all kinds of things. It was slow at a number of polling stations, not everywhere, but a number of them. Is this a moment to have the election department relook at mail-in voting. You know, it's been done in the U.S. since the Civil War. It's been proven that it can be done safely, efficiently, effectively. And in a place like Singapore, it seems to me, with such a great postal system and with our national ID system, that barcoding, mail-in ballots, et cetera, could be a very useful and efficient and effective way to perhaps get rid of some of those queues, and especially for the pioneer generation, the older folks. Do you think that discussion will come to the fore since we had this experience in this particular election?
Yeah, I think our sort of institutions in Singapore are always looking at the next things that would make things better, right? As we move to become a smart nation, I think we are definitely not going to rule out any sort of new advancements that would make sense for the country.
But there has been some pushback. There has been some pushback against that, though, right? I mean, for security reasons, right? Going to a mail-in ballot system, or even for Singaporeans living overseas, for example, absentee ballots that many nations do.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think there's been some concerns, obviously, because it's a new thing. And I think that there is a need to explore all the different aspects of it and how it will work for, you know, a country like Singapore, which is very different from the U.S. in terms of size and scale. And I think it definitely wouldn't be ruled out. But I would say that the experience on Friday, on polling day, first of all, it was quite varied. So when I went to vote and when my family went to vote, there was hardly any queues. The process was really smooth. Mm-hmm. But we saw the videos. We saw the photos of the long snaking queues in some of the polling stations. And this was largely down to the extra sort of checks that were put in place to protect people's health during this COVID-19 outbreak. And then it came to the unprecedented decision to extend the voting hours by 2 hours, which sort of, you know, threw everything into a slight disarray, to put it mildly. I mean, the media was quite traumatized by that. So, no, I'm definitely interested to see how, you know, the conversation about, you know, new developments like postal votes and things like that. You're 100% right that a country like Singapore with superior, you know, technological development and capabilities really should look at something that makes things easier for people to vote, that makes more inclusive the democratic process in Singapore. And I'm sure we will see something being developed in the next 5 years.
As always, thanks, Nick, for your comments today. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me. Chat soon.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.